Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast. This is Will Pruitt here to break down TNA Impact Wrestling for you. But before I do, I'm going to plug the site, because that's what we do. If you're a fan of ProWrestling.net, and you should be, because you're listening to this, and it'd be weird if you weren't and you were listening to this, unless you just listen to kind of hate us, which is rude. Don't be rude, jerks. It's Christmas. You should really consider checking out the ProWrestling.net membership site. It's WrestleMania season coming up. Royal Rumble is less than a month, well, just over a month away. It's January 27th. And if you want to get some of the best wrestling coverage on the internet around Rumble time, you want to be a ProWrestling.net member. You get ad-free access to the site, members' exclusive audio updates from myself, Jason Powell, Chris Short, Jake Barnett, and occasionally Ryan Kasser. You also get .NET member-exclusive news, some fun things that have just been broken on the member-exclusive side first recently. CM Punk's injury status. .NET members knew about some of the intricacies of CM Punk's injury and surgery before anyone else. The people that are working as aces and eights right now, which segment of the Slammies drew the highest ratings, that stuff was known to .NET members before it got out to the general public. From people copying it from the .NET membership side. Thanks, guys. But it's a great benefit. You also get access to the .NET member forum. You can interact with the staff and other fantastic .NET members. And all of it, you know, it's a pretty low price for your wrestling website membership dollar. We're talking about $7.50 a month if you just want to try it out for a month. Or if you take the annual option, that drops down to $5.50 a month. Go to ProWrestling.net, click that membership link on the right-hand side of the page, and give it a try. It's also a great Christmas present for your wrestling-loving friends. Do people have wrestling friends? Like, I know I get together with groups. I hope you people have wrestling-loving friends. It enhances the experience greatly. But let's get into this episode of Impact. This will be the last Impact audio I do this year, so excuse me if I, much like all of you at work today, I'm sure, just try to get through it and get out of here. That's great. I try to sell the website, then I say something like I'm slacking. Damn it, I'm slacking. But let's get into it. This was TNA's attempt to kind of put together a big show when they, for the first time, when they weren't up against a Thursday night football game. You know, NFL ran 13 Thursday night games, and it didn't really seem to hurt TNA as much as you would expect in the ratings. But it still didn't exactly help them, either. And they had three championship matches on this show, with a TV title match, a Knockouts title match, and a world title match in the main event. But again, the show seemed to kind of focus around and get bookended by Hulk Hogan, Bully Ray, and Brooke Hogan. That seems to be TNA's favorite angle right now, even though it may not be their best one. But let's get into it from the top and work our way through. A graphic talked about, just expressed TNA's sympathies over what happened in Connecticut last week. A classy move. Both wrestling companies, WWE and TNA, had really, you know, just in the simple responses to the tragedy, did some really classy things, and I know I appreciate that. I'm sure everyone kind of appreciates the fact that they're not ignoring what happened, but they're also not, you know, trying to run angles around it, which would be the most awkward thing in the world. Leave that to political TV shows, not wrestling. The voiceover that WWE has stolen, and I think both companies do really well with, basically ran down the matches for the night. Then we had Taz, Mike Tenay, and Todd Kennelly welcoming us. Kurt Angle's music hit. He came to the ring limping because, remember, he was like steel piped in the leg or something last week. And then the Aces and Eights came out, and it was D-Von with Doc, what we assume is Wes Briscoe and what we assume is Luke Gallows. Basically just kind of the four-man Aces and Eights contingent. And Angle said, hey, you want to bring your gang? I've got a gang too. And Samoa Joe, Wes Briscoe, and Garrett Bischoff came down to back up Angle. What a sad role for Samoa Joe. You know, I thought he was doing some really good work as the TV champion, and now he's Kurt Angle's sidekick buddy, which is odd considering the long feud that they've had anyways. I don't know. TNA consistently finds weirder and weirder ways to use Samoa Joe and not actually make money or do anything compelling with him. And this is the latest in a long, long line of those. And Kurt Angle also challenged D-Von to the TV title match when the title match was already made. That was awkward. But the first match of the night was D-Von versus Kurt Angle. Kurt Angle had Wes Briscoe, Garrett Bischoff, and Samoa Joe. D-Von had the Aces and Eights, and towards the middle of the match, those guys started fighting. TNA cut to commercial. They came back and said that the referee had told both groups to go to the back. Man, if only referees had been around when the Aces and Eights were attacking everyone. Because if a referee can force this Rebel Biker Gang to the back in one segment, why can't they do it in all of them? Why wasn't Earl Hebner running down and doing the big exaggerated, you're out of here motion? Earl Hebner loves that pop. Earl Hebner loves kicking people out of ringside. Man, Earl Hebner is good at things. Why wasn't he running down every time the Aces and Eights came out, if that's all it took? Sadly, the Aces and Eights would return, and Angle's Army would return. Basically, they'd all get into a fight at ringside again. The referee would get distracted. One of the larger, chubbier Aces and Eights dudes ran in, hit Angle in the leg with a pipe, and D-Von managed to cover him for the win, basically. So D-Von retained the TNA TV Championship. This was probably as good of a match as D-Von is capable of having, which is really strange. And it wasn't a bad match. This match on most other shows, I'm like, hey, it was pretty good. Kurt Angle, we know he can have really good but formulaic matches. D-Von, if he's following the Angle formula, has a decent match. But for the most part, I'm not a big fan of what D-Von does in the ring. I have yet to see a reason that TNA has D-Von in this role. Like, it really confuses me why D-Von is here, and they haven't justified it other than, man, you know, Hogan likes D-Von, I guess, and said so in some tweets of things. I don't know. I just don't get why D-Von was the guy to fill this role. But D-Von retained the TNA TV Championship. Backstage, we got Brooke Hogan doing the Championship Thursday elimination gimmick, and it was ODB, Miss Tessmacher, because Brooke Hogan took her first name away, Mickie James and Velvet Sky. The women kind of talked about how Velvet Sky just came back, so she doesn't deserve it, and Mickie James had a shot recently, so she doesn't deserve it. And then Brooke Hogan went, ODB, your husband has an injured leg, so obviously you should not get a title shot. Yeah, no, really, that's pretty much the sentence she said, and eliminated ODB for some odd reason. Cool? Like, I don't know. If you want to see some of the worst acting in the world, watch these segments, because the TNA woman's contingent does not act well. It's just not what they're into. And for the second month in a row, I'll say I really like the Championship Thursday elimination concept. But I am not a huge fan of the Championship Thursday eliminations that we got this month. I think they're a nice chance to flesh out some characters, but TNA recently has shifted the focus to the person doing the eliminations instead of the people being eliminated, and that has hurt characters in the process. So hopefully TNA gets off of that silly train and, you know, gets back to enhancing the people being eliminated and not the people doing the eliminating. Because if there's one character I don't really want to know more about on TNA TV, it's Brooke Hogan. Like, it would be like Brooke Hogan at the top, Garrett Bischoff right beneath it. Which is weird, because it's like they're the children of the people running it. I don't know, maybe the people running it have a vested interest in their kids. That'd be strange, right? God, I love nepotism. Went to commercial, came back. Kenny King cut a promo saying what happened with Rob last week was him trying to get a win, and it was nothing personal. So Kenny King then said basically a dream's going to come true tonight for him again because he gets to team up with Rob Van Dam. Then we cut to the ring, and it was Matt Morgan and Joey Ryan versus Kenny King and Rob Van Dam. And the weird thing about this match is Rob Van Dam never seemed upset. Like, I really expected a little bit of, like, RVD being really cautious of Kenny King or being like, what the hell happened last week, man? You cheated to beat me, and that's not okay. But instead, Rob just teamed up with Kenny King. At one point, they, like, high-fived and did a double kick and all sorts of things. Like, they seemed like best frenzies till the finish, and it was like, well, why didn't Rob Van Dam at least go, like, what's going on, and, you know, have Kenny King explain himself? Rob was just cool with it. Also, I haven't said this in a while, Rob Van Dam entered to the worst theme music in wrestling history. That's right, it's officially won that award. The Rob Van Dam, oh, laughing show theme music is officially the worst thing ever. Almost as bad as me just pseudo-singing it. Yes, I'm sorry for that, guys. I hope you're... If you're listening to this at work, I really hope you're using headphones. That's going to be weird if you're not. Sorry about that. Sorry, co-workers of people listening at work, if your co-worker is not using headphones. Maybe you should inspire them to put some headphones on. Maybe that should be a Secret Santa gift for my homie listening to this right now. People sitting around my homie. Thank you. Yeah. So, anyways, this match happened. And the finish of this match saw Kenny King look like he was set up for the Carbon Footprint, but he slipped out of the ring. He kind of looked around, slipped out of the ring, and let Rob Van Dam get it, and just kind of looked like, whoa, I ain't touching that, as he walked away. You know, decent storytelling there. They're at least fording a story and fording a feud with Kenny King and Rob Van Dam over the X Division Championship. There's a feud. It involves X Division guys. I'm not going to complain too much other than just that they didn't keep up the consistency of the feud this week heading into the match, which, you know, kind of bummed me out. I still don't see why Morgan and Ryan are together. They seem like they're from two different universes. Like, Matt Morgan is a big, scary monster in a cape for some reason. I know it was Hulk Hogan's when he fought Andre the Giant or something. Like, dumb. But instead, and Joey Ryan is like a cartoon character rubbing his crotch an awful lot. I don't see, like, there's been nothing to show common ground between them or why they are together, just that they are. It's kind of strange. And thank you for Chris Shore in his slant on this on ProWrestling.net for this sentence, which I think is rather brilliant. They got where they wanted to go, but it was as clumsy and awkward as a virgin on prom night. Stay classy, Chris. The heel turn kind of promo from AJ Styles aired last week, and then Kazarian was asked about AJ walking, and Kazarian said AJ's boots were made for walking, and that's what he did. And he said everyone was going to see how much he appreciated his friend Christopher Daniels tonight in the middle of the ring. Then he got a phone call from his friend Nick and asked about a dancer's hoof in mouth disease. You get it? Because it's Santa. Yeah. By the way, I loved the Santa segment. I will get to that, but that was one of my favorite parts of the show. That was fun. Hulk Hogan came out and basically said, hey, we're going to have a Wrestler of the Year vote in TNA. And you fans get to vote. And, you know, was basically saying, you know, the fans are going to decide who the TNA Wrestler of the Year is. And then Aces and Eights dastardly theme music hit. And D-Von came out with a microphone and said, you know, 2012 was the year that Aces and Eights began. And I said to myself, hold up, wait a minute. D-Von said previously, while explaining going to the Aces and Eights, that he and the Aces and the Eights go way back. Does way back, is that just like, we go way back to June when Aces and Eights came into TNA? Or is way back like, we go way back 25 years? Because I think he said this goes beyond, like, the Dudley Boys. We go way back. Like, before Bubba, there I was in Aces and Eights. But then he said Aces and Eights started here. I'm going to need to see the book on Aces and Eights club history. I know that people have written about the Hells Angels and everything, but Hells Angels never invaded a wrestling promotion. I mean, there has to be a book available on Aces and Eights clubhouse history that I can read and get my Aces and Eights history on. I mean, when did Bane from the Batman movies join the gang? What, was it before or after he destroyed Gotham? Are we seeing, like, Bane's early years here? Or are we seeing kind of the more mature Bane after Catwoman, for some reason, takes him out because The Dark Knight Rises couldn't provide a satisfying ending for anyone? Seriously, what a crappy movie. Sorry to anyone that loved it, but it's bad. I just don't understand why Bane is in this gang or why they started this year but go way back. And again, it's a little bit of consistency that would go a really long way for TNA. But the Aces and Eights came to the ring It looked like they were going to take out Hogan and took a really long time to do so. So long, in fact, that Bully Ray managed to run from the back with a chain and they all ran off. Instead of, you know, like the four or five guys that were there with a pipe going like, yeah, we're going to take our chances with this guy with the chain. No, they all ran off. And I think Luke Gallows was like, you're next, Bully! To which it's like, dude, you yell like you're next or you're dead constantly. That's like your catchphrase. You're next, dead! And it means nothing. But then Bully Ray offered to shake the hand of Hulk Hogan. And Hulk Hogan said, no, you're doing it with my daughter fairly often. I'm not going to shake your hand. And walked away. Yeah, kind of, you know, Hogan looks like kind of a jerk. Bully Ray, the one positive that I will say about this angle, it's really interesting to see Bully Ray trying to prove himself to Hogan in a way very similar to the way that he, as a babyface, kind of has to prove himself to the fans still. I think a lot of fans are unsure of whether they can trust and get behind Bully Ray because he was so evil for so long. And now he's trying to prove that he's a good guy, and it's just an interesting parallel to see Bully Ray having to do that with Hogan the same way that Bully Ray kind of has to do that with TNA. I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy for seeing it. I'm enjoying that idea anyways. Jeff Hardy then cut a promo backstage, and it wasn't Jeff Hardy's inner thoughts, which I appreciated, but it was like the camera peeking through Jeff Hardy's door and Jeff Hardy talking straight to his locker. So I'm going to assume maybe he was Skyping his wife, Beth, and he was saying all of this. Like, that's the only thing that makes sense to me at this point is Jeff Hardy was on the Skype and he had his iPad or his laptop set up in his locker. And he was talking to that and we just happened to spy on him. But, you know, it's a step above Jeff Hardy's inner thoughts because at least his mouth is moving. But basically, he respects Austin Aries, but, he was mad because Aries paid for someone to attack him and said tonight it's going to be a fight, and he wasn't hard to find or something like that. Brooke Hogan then just said, Miss Tessmacher, we've got the same first name, even though we don't say yours anymore, so obviously you're eliminated. Okay, not really, but it was as nonsensical as that, because she basically said, you guys just came back so with Velvet Sky and Mickie James, so obviously you deserve the shot. Okay. The logic behind these Championship Thursday eliminations gets thinner and thinner sometimes. Like, man, Brooke Tessmacher, you look like Texas right now, and that pisses me off. You're out of here. Brooke Tessmacher, you're smiling. I don't like smiles. You're out of here. Brooke Tessmacher, do you have two different size feet? I'm sorry, that's unacceptable. Brooke Tessmacher, you don't allow yourself to be objectified enough in your entrance. You're out of here. My God, you'd think, I really wish Brooke Hogan would have just said, Mickie James, you might be the worst-dressed wrestler in TNA history. Outsies. Go get some athletic gear. Sadly, that did not happen. I cannot get that lucky, and I don't know why. I mean, does no one in TNA see how poorly dressed she is? Do they not have, like, a style consultant? TNA, I will be your style consultant. No money, no anything. Just email me pictures of what you're thinking of people wearing, and I will email you back, yay or nay, with some reasons. I'm fine with it. I think I may start an annual best and worst dressed in wrestling list that I compile on an annual basis. I may actually pull my wife in to help me with this, and she just gave me the thumbs up from the other room. And start an annual best and worst dressed in wrestling list. I'm going to have to talk to Jason Powell about this. But stay tuned, because that's a thing that might happen. But yeah, where was I? Oh, and Kazarian was slowly heading to the ring with presents, like you do. So then we saw a video recap of the AJ Styles stuff. And Kazarian made his entrance with gifts. The ring had a Santa Claus throne with a Christmas tree, and Kaz introduced Daniels. Daniels came down. He rhymed while doing it. And then Kazarian introduced the guy with the biggest sack he had ever seen, Santa Claus. Normally, I would criticize crude humor like this, but I just got done watching the season finale of the League, so I think I'm in the mood for... I was more in the mood for crude humor while I watched this, and I got a kick out of the sack joke. Sorry, worlds. I know you expect me to be the standard bearer of, you know, class and culture and pro wrestling, but it's Christmas. And Santa came out with, like, candy canes and hanging them out to the kids, and it was obviously, like, not even a good fake Santa. It was a really bad one. Like, you could see where the beard and thing connected and all that. So, it was obviously supposed to be a fake one, but Daniels got up from the throne and allowed Santa to sit there and sat on Santa's lap and basically, oh, hey, I was mentioned in Chris's report tonight. He knows that I read these, or last night, he knows that I read these closely. They said that they had a gift for Santa, and Kazarian pulled out a box with a pair of Zubaz in it, and I got psyched because Zubaz are the best pants ever. Christy, buy me Zubaz.
No.
I hate you. That's my wife making a guest appearance on the podcast because she's a jerk face. Daniel said he had been so good he got rid of the biggest loser in TNA history. Santa said he would grant Daniels a wish, and Daniels wished for Santa to bring AJ Styles kids some presents because they ain't getting nothing this year. And then James Storm's music came out, and he didn't care if they talked junk about AJ, but he wasn't going to let them destroy Christmas. Honestly, James Storm defending Christmas could be like a weekly segment on TNA for a little while. I would be totally fine with it. James Storm is the defender of Christmas in my heart now. And basically said, you know, Santa, you do so much work one night a year. You do all of this. And Storm kind of did a little bit to expose that this was a fake Santa. But if I have one criticism, it's honestly that they should have done more to show that this guy wasn't Santa for the kids watching. I know some of you just groaned, but damn it, it's Santa. And if you don't believe in Santa, you have no heart. So Storm got in the ring, but Santa talked him down. Storm quizzed Santa over previous Christmases. Storm, by the way, wanted a case of beer last year for Christmas. That was what Storm asked for. There was a funny moment where Santa guessed with Kazarian and Daniels that Storm wanted a Travis Tritt CD, and that was not correct. But then Storm superkicked Santa in the throne, and there was a really nicely choreographed moment. I actually rewound it because I thought that the choreography of it was so good. Because Daniels and Kazarian were leaning against the throne, and when Storm hit Santa with the superkick, Daniels and Kazarian very subtly dumped the throne over. So it looked like the superkick took Santa completely out of the throne. I'm a staged combat nerd at times when I watch wrestling, and I thought that was a really nice moment of, you know, everyone working together. Just a fun segment. Then James Storm put on the Santa Claus hat and threw out the contents of Santa's sack of toys to the children, or to the people in the Impact Zone, and it was a few action figures and candy canes. Harmless, kind of fun segment. Like, Chris Short wasn't a huge fan of it. He said swing and a miss from Daniels and Kaz. I disagreed. I was laughing through it. I thought that it was really entertaining and a nice way to transition from the feud between AJ and Daniels and Kazarian to a feud between Storm and Daniels and Kazarian. The only other real complaint I have is that I really like seeing Daniels and Kazarian in tag team feuds. They're the best tag team act in wrestling right now, and we're seeing them kind of participate in a bunch of singles feuds, which is fine, but not, you know, not using them to the best of their abilities. Backstage, Austin Aries made fun of Jeff Hardy's internal monologue, which made me wonder, is TNA abandoning the concept? Do they realize how silly it was now? Or are they going to go back to it? And, Aries was like, can you hear me? Did you just hear what I thought? And then said, you know, kind of his spiel about not being a huge fan of Jeff Hardy. He said everyone would understand him when he won the world title back. Brooke Hogan was seen heading towards the ring holding a piece of paper, and it's either a script or a pro and con list to Mickey and Velvet Sky. I'm not sure which. Sting was revealed as the 1-3-13 guy as a... they played a video package that was like
So the stinger's coming to get you. I'm coming to get you, aces and ace. 1-3, 1-3. I'm coming to get you.
It was supposed to be kind of weird and apocalyptic. The thing I don't like about it is the language used in the 1-3-13 vignettes was like, the road will be paved with blood. Their heads will roll. People gonna get it. And the actual, like, Sting just doesn't fit the apocalyptic roads paved with blood thing. So, why was he there? But, you know, TNA kind of gave up that mystery just for the fact that they could promote that Sting was coming back, which is fine. It's what they wanted to do. I don't necessarily see the logic, but that's life. Then the Aces and Eights were shown in their clubhouse, and obviously they have Spike TV playing in their clubhouse 24/7. Not just because Impact is on it, but because they like watching the trashiest TV humanly possible. And D-Von, the VP, said they're going to need more help. And I thought, didn't you have like 70 Aces and Eights guys a few, like a month ago? Have they all been killed? Like, what's going on? Are Aces and Eights dropping like flies across the country and we just don't know about it? Because we only see like the six same dudes. And the VP was basically saying they need more guys, and D-Von said he could reach out to someone who was a little bit arrogant but could do the trick. And I wondered, like, okay, who are they saying is a little bit arrogant? Like, who are they reaching out to recruit to Aces and Eights? That's kind of strange. And they all voted to allow D-Von to reach out for a sit-down next week. Man, I know. Next week is, what is the date of that? Let me check on it. Next Thursday is the 27th, and I may still be at my in-laws. And I know, for me, I'm not about to look at my in-laws and go, hey guys, I'm going to go in the other room and watch some TNA, because A, my father-in-law would like stand up with a baseball bat that he pulls out of nowhere to threaten me. And B, I just don't like watching TNA that much that I'm going to do it with the family. I'll go back and catch up, but like I said, this is probably my last TNA audio for the year. I'm sorry, but I'm going to enjoy some Christmas vacay. You know what I mean? Brooke Hogan then picked Mickey James and told Velvet Sky to watch the match because she might be next. Velvet was not happy. Mickey James, or as I like to call her, old bandana boobs, was psyched, and she went to the ring to have an uninspired match, Mickey James versus Tara, with Jesse for the Knockouts Championship. The strange thing about this match is they talked about how unfair it was. Like, at one point, like, Mickey James didn't get a fair shot at the pay-per-view because Jesse Goddard was at ringside and he interfered. So, of course, what happens? Jesse still comes out to ringside, and it's like Brooke Hogan wasn't bright enough to go, Jesse, you are banned from ringside for this match. It was just like, meh, let it roll. Okay, that's chill. Weird things in wrestling. And again, it's a little bit of storyline consistency. It's having someone that's looking at the big picture. And I feel like there's usually more oversight on the live shows than on the tape shows. And maybe it's because TNA, they're scrambling to produce so much content in 3 days. You know, they had a pay-per-view and then taped 3 shows over 2 days. They were scrambling to do so much that it was just like, get it done, get it done, get it done, get it done. And no one was backstage going, hold on, we're going to use this as reasoning for this, so therefore this should not be happening. Hold on. You know, no one was backstage kind of redirecting everyone's eyes to see the flaws in storytelling. And maybe that's one of the, maybe that is the main difference between TNA Live and TNA on tape, is that TNA on tape is produced rapidly and so fast that it's hard to, it's kind of hard for anyone to catch these mistakes, where TNA Live, you know, while it's produced possibly quicker in the moment, it's actually produced in a, it's actually produced in a slower way. Yeah, just, you know, kind of me pontificating here. Mickey James and Tara, Jesse with the distraction, allowing Tara to hit her facebuster type move for the win. Tara retains the Knockouts Championship. Joseph Park is training. I worry that the Joseph Park training and becoming a wrestler is going to kill the Joseph Park gimmick I have come to know and love. Even like Jake Barnett and I for .NET members just recorded our best of the year podcast of the .NET Countdown. And one of the things that I had on my kind of honorable mentions list was Joseph Park's matches. Just in general, I adore them. And I worry that him learning to wrestle is going to make me not love him as much. Then we saw ring entrances for the main event handled by Jeremy Borash, like he always does such a great job with. And it was Austin Aries versus Jeff Hardy. We saw the ring introductions, went to commercial, and then went, like, got, like, a few minutes of the match and went to commercial again. TNA kind of had to make up for lost time here. But after the second commercial, they were allowed a lot of time to work, and the match really got going. There was a moment where it looked like Aries was going to win. He hit a low blow with the ref distracted, had a brainbuster, had him covered, had Hardy covered, called for a ref. Bobby Roode ran in, pulled the second ref out of the ring, counted to two, got up, flipped off Aries and mouthed the F word at him. You can decide which one. And then hit a low blow and a, and then, Aries, or, hold on. Roode hit him with a spine buster. That's it. Hit him with a spine buster. Hardy hit a twist of fate and the swanton for the win. You know, good championship match. I like the dynamic they are building between Jeff Hardy, Austin Aries, and Bobby Roode. While the Aces and Eights involvement doesn't make a ton of sense to me, what they're doing is building an organic reason for a three-way match, which is something that TNA does not do anywhere near as often as they should. Or wrestling in general, sometimes they're just like, screw it, let's have a three-way. Or, you know, it's okay if it's in a three-way. But no, they've decided, hey, let's build a really organic reason, and I think your Genesis main event is going to be Roode, Hardy, and Aries. And I think that's a well-built match that TNA has done a nice job transitioning us into seeing. So that was really good. The match was good. Hardy and Aries went about 18 minutes, even with the commercials in there. A really good TV main event. Hogan then was shown walking through the parking area, and the off-camera guy... And Hogan said not to worry about the Brooke and Bully thing. And in the background, Brooke and Bully were making out. And Hogan kind of was upset, got in his car, sped off, and the camera guy said, holy S-word, to close the show. Okay, you know, TNA, do what you will. It's chill. I'm over it now. Like I've said before, I'm not a big fan of this angle. I don't think it's working well, and that's disappointing to me. So, yeah, that was TNA Impact Wrestling. That's kind of how it closed for the year. Some good and some bad. You know, kind of an uneven show. But at the same time, some promising stuff, like the Santa Claus angle, which I really enjoyed. And the match between the match between Aries and Hardy was really, really good. You know, this was their attempt to put on a semi-big show. They didn't promote it, I feel like, you know, like a big show, like they did that whole effing show that one time, or some others. But they tried. Not a bad one. Not a bad show. TNA is working on it. They are, and I kind of wonder what it's going to take to get them back to the creative high point that they were at back in a few months ago. But, you know, that's neither here nor there at the moment. TNA is doing what they can, so... Yeah, that's going to wrap it up. Guys, Happy New Year, Merry Christmas, all of that. Thank you for listening to the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast. Thank you to our members listening right now for supporting ProWrestling.net. Again, if you're not a member and you'd like to be, it is a fantastic time to sign up and try it out. Royal Rumble time's coming. Elimination Chamber, WrestleMania, it's all coming at you. Man, just lock into an annual membership, and every year for Christmas, you know what you can do? Renew your .NET membership and celebrate your .NET memberhood. It's worth it. Thank you so much for listening, guys. Thank you so much for just the support of ProWrestling.net. We appreciate everyone that visits the site, that is on the site regularly and all that. Have a fantastic holiday season. From the bottom of my heart, Merry Christmas, and thank you for listening.